The Life of J.R.R. Tolkien. Tolkien was born on the 3rd of January 1892 in Bloemfontein in the Orange Free State, later South Africa, to Arthur Tolkien and his young wife Mabel. The Tolkiens were Prussian in origin. The word itself has two possible meanings. One likely candidate is literally Tolkien, Tolk's kin, the son of Tolk. Tolkien, as an accomplished philologist, philology from philologia, love of literature words, is the study of the historical development of language, believed that his surname derived from the German word Tolkun, meaning foolhardy. One Johann, later John Benjamin Tolkien of Danzig in West Prussia, emigrated to London in the 1770s, J.R.R. Tolkien's great-great-grandfather. John Benjamin Tolkien and his descendants were artisan craftsmen who made and sold timepieces and pianos in London and later Birmingham. In 1891, Mabel Suffield left England for the Cape to marry Arthur Tolkien. She was only 21, having already been engaged to Arthur since she was 18, forbidden by her father to marry so young. Up until then, the couple's actions had been under the closest scrutiny. Secret letters and furtive glances were exchanged during the many parties the two families hosted, musical gatherings centering around performances on a Tolkien piano. The Tolkien piano firm had by now been lost to Arthur's family. Bankrupt, Arthur had tried a banking career in Birmingham, but he soon left for South Africa in pursuit of better prospects for his would-be family. When Mabel arrived and the couple were finally married, their prospects seemed equally grim as outlanders in a Boer republic. Within 3 years, Mabel had given birth to two healthy boys, John Ronald Rule, known to his friends and family as Ronald, and Hilary Arthur. While Hilary was amenable to warm climates, Ronald was sickly, and Mabel grew concerned for his health during a severe drought. It was arranged that Ronald should go to England for a lengthy visit. In 1895, Mabel, Hilary and Ronald departed for England while Arthur stayed in South Africa to attend to his business, intent on catching up with his family later. Arthur, however, died of a fever in South Africa before he could join them. Destitute, Mabel took Ronald to live with his grandparents in King's Heath, Birmingham. In 1896, they moved to Sarehole, now in Hall Green, then a village in Worcestershire. He enjoyed exploring Sarehole Mill and Molesley Bog, and the Clent, Lickey and Malvern Hills, which would later inspire scenes in his books, along with nearby towns and villages such as Bromsgrove, Alcester, Alvschurch, and places such as his Aunt Jane's farm, Bag End. Mabel Tolkien homeschooled her children. She taught Ronald a great deal of botany and awakened in him the enjoyment of the look and feel of plants. Young Tolkien liked to draw landscapes and trees, but his favourite lessons were those concerning languages, and his mother taught him the rudiments of Latin. Tolkien could read by the age of 4 and could write fluently soon afterwards. His mother allowed him to read books such as Treasure Island and Pied Piper, which he disliked, and Alice in Wonderland by Lewis Carroll, which Tolkien found amusing and yet disturbing. He liked stories about Native Americans and the works of fantasy by George MacDonald. In addition, the fairy books of Andrew Lang were of particular importance to him, and their influence is apparent in some of his later writings, notably his famous lecture given in 1939 on fairy stories, though he contested Lang's broad definition of what constituted a fairy story. Mabel Tolkien was received into the Catholic Church in 1900 over the protests of her Unitarian father, John Suffield, and Anglican brother-in-law, Walter Ilkeldon, who ceased all financial assistance to her. Mabel had been increasingly drawn at first to her Anglicanism and had begun attending Mass at the Catholic Church of St. Anne's in Ulchester Street, Birmingham, in the wake of her husband's premature death. In 1904, when Ronald was just 12, his mother succumbed to type 1 diabetes at the age of 34, a few years before the development of insulin treatments. 9 years after her death, Tolkien wrote, "My own dear mother was a martyr indeed, and it is not to everybody that God grants so easy a way to his great gifts as he did to Hilary and myself, giving us a mother who killed herself with labour and trouble to ensure us keeping the faith." Before her death, Mabel Tolkien had assigned the guardianship of her sons to her close friend, Father Francis Xavier Morgan of the Birmingham Oratory, who was assigned to bring them up as good Catholics. In a 1965 letter to his son Michael, Tolkien recalled the influence of the man whom he always called Father Francis. He was an upper-class Welsh Spaniard, Tory, and seemed to some just a pottering old gossip. He was, and he was not. I first learned charity and forgiveness from him, and in the light of it, pierced even the liberal darkness out of which I came, knowing more about Bloody Mary than the mother of Jesus, who was never mentioned, except as an object of wicked worship by the Romanists. Tolkien would later attend King Edward's School in Birmingham. In his early teens, Tolkien had his first encounter with a constructed language, Animalic, an invention of his cousins Mary and Marjorie Ingledon. At that time, he was studying Latin and Anglo-Saxon. Their interest in Animalic soon died away, but Mary and others, including Tolkien himself, invented a new and more complex language called Nevbosh, New Nonsense. The next constructed language Tolkien came to work with, Nefarin, would be his own creation. Tolkien learned the constructed language of Esperanto some time before 1909. He then composed the Book of Foxrook, a notebook with the earliest examples of his invented alphabets, next to notes written in Esperanto. For the next 65 years, Tolkien developed these languages. In 1931, Tolkien gave a talk to a society called A Hobby for the Home, titled A Secret Vice, detailing his passion for something he called glossopoeia. As a professional philologist, the art of language construction formed an integral part of his study of ancient Germanic languages. As a fantasy writer, this process, instrumental for the creation of his myths, the corresponding art to glossopoeia being mythopoeia, myth-making. When talking about his invented tongues, most famously the Elvish languages Sindarin and Quenya, Tom Shippey contends that the language making came first and the legendarium, the complete lore of Middle-earth, second. Rather, as Tolkien understood that languages are alive and develop historically, the impetus to create a fantasy world was driven by a need to establish a space for his fantasy languages to exist in. In 1911, while at King Edward's School, Tolkien and his three friends, Rob Gilson, Geoffrey Bach Smith, and Christopher Wiseman, formed a semi-secret society they called the Tea Club and Barrovian Society, an allusion to their fondness for drinking tea in Barrow Stones near the school and secretly in the school library. In October of the same year, Tolkien began studying at Exeter College, Oxford. He initially studied classics, but changed his course in 1913 to English language and literature, graduating in 1915 with first-class honours. Among his tutors at Oxford was Joseph Wright, whose primer of the Gothic language had inspired Tolkien as a schoolboy. At the age of 16, Tolkien met Edith Mary Bratt, who was 3 years his senior. According to Humphrey Carpenter, the most famous biographer of Tolkien, Edith and Ronald took to frequenting Birmingham tea shops, especially one which had a balcony overlooking the pavement. There they would sit and throw sugar lumps into the hats of passers-by, moving to the next table when the sugar bowl was empty. With two people of their personalities, and in their position, romance was bound to flourish. Both were orphans in need of affection, and they found that they could give it to one another. During the summer of 1909, they decided that they were in love. Father Morgan considered it altogether unfortunate that his surrogate son was romantically involved with an older Protestant woman. Morgan prohibited him from meeting, talking to, or even corresponding with Edith until he was 21. Tolkien obeyed this prohibition to the letter, with one notable early exception, over which Father Morgan threatened to cut short his university career if he did not stop. On the evening of his 21st birthday, Tolkien wrote to Edith, who was living with a family friend, C.H. Jessop in Cheltenham. He declared that he had never ceased to love her and asked her to marry him. Edith replied that she had already accepted the proposal of George Field, the brother of one of her closest friends at school. But Edith said she had agreed to marry Field only because she felt on the shelf and had begun to doubt that Tolkien still cared for her. She explained that because of Tolkien's letter, everything had changed. On the 8th of January 1913, Tolkien travelled by train to Cheltenham and was met on the platform by Edith. The two took a walk into the countryside, sat under a railway viaduct, and talked. By the end of the day, Edith had agreed to accept Tolkien's proposal. She wrote to Field and returned her engagement ring. Field was dreadfully upset at first, and the Field family was insulted and angry. Upon learning of Edith's plans, Jessop wrote to her guardian, "I have nothing to say against Tolkien. He is a cultured gentleman, but his prospects are poor in the extreme, and when will he be in a position to marry, I cannot imagine. Had he adopted a profession, it would have been different." Following their engagement, Edith reluctantly announced that she was converted into Catholicism at Tolkien's insistence. Jessop, like many others of his age and class, strongly anti-Catholic, was infuriated and ordered Edith to find other lodgings. Edith Bratt and Ronald Tolkien were formally engaged at Birmingham in January 1913 and married at St. Mary Immaculate Catholic Church of Warwick on the 22nd of March 1916. In a later letter to his son Michael, Tolkien expressed admiration for his wife's willingness to marry a man with no job, little money, and no prospects, except the likelihood of being killed in the Great War. On the 4th of August 1914, Britain declared war on Germany. Tolkien's relatives were shocked when he elected not to volunteer immediately for the British Army. To Michael, Tolkien recalled, "In those days, chaps joined up or were scorned publicly. I was a nasty cleft to be in for a young man with too much imagination and little physical courage." Instead, Tolkien endured the calumny and entered a programme by which he delayed enlistment until he completed his degree. Shortly after his finals in July 1915, he was commissioned as a temporary second lieutenant in the Lancashire Fusiliers. He trained with the 13th Reserve Battalion on Cannock Chase, Rugley, Staffordshire, for nearly a year. In a letter to Edith, Tolkien complained, "Gentlemen are rare among the superiors, and even human beings are rare indeed." Following their wedding, Lieutenant and Mrs. Tolkien took up lodgings near the training camp. On the 2nd of June 1916, Tolkien received a telegram summoning him to Folkestone for posting to France. Tolkien later wrote, "Junior officers were being killed off, a dozen a minute. Parting from my wife then, it was like a death." While in France, waiting to be summoned to his unit, Tolkien sank into boredom. To pass the time, he composed a poem entitled The Lonely Isle, which was inspired by his feelings during the sea crossing to Calais. To evade the British Army's postal censorship, he developed a code of dots by which Edith could track his movements. On the 27th of June, 1916, he joined his battalion near Amiens. He found himself commanding enlisted men who were drawn mainly from the mining, milling, and weaving towns of Lancashire. Tolkien remarked that he felt an affinity for these working-class men, but military protocol prohibited friendships with other ranks. Instead, he was required to take charge of them, discipline them, train them, and probably censor their letters. If possible, he was supposed to inspire their love and loyalty. The most improper job of any man is bossing other men. Not one in 1 million is fit for it, and least of all those who seek the opportunity. Tolkien arrived at the Somme in early July 1916. In between terms behind the lines at Bousincourt, he participated in assaults on the Schwaben redoubt and the Leipzig salient. In late October 1916, as his battalion attacked Regina Trench, Tolkien contracted trench fever, a disease carried by lice. He was subsequently invalided to England. Many of his school friends were killed during the war. Among their number were Rob Gilson of the Tea Club and Barrovian Society, who was killed on the first day of the Somme while leading his men in the assault on Beaumont Hamel. Fellow TCBS member Geoffrey Smith was killed during battle when a German artillery shell landed on a first aid post. Tolkien's battalion was almost completely wiped out following his return to England. Tolkien wrote that his experience at the front had taught him a deep sympathy and feeling for the Tommy, especially the plain soldier from the counties. A weak and emaciated Tolkien spent the remainder of the war alternating between hospitals and garrison duties, being deemed medically unfit for general service. During his recovery in a cottage in Little Heywood, Staffordshire, he began to work on what was called the Book of Lost Tales, beginning with the fall of Gondolin. In 1917, Edith bore their first child, John Francis Rule Tolkien. After John Francis came Michael, and then Christopher, and finally a daughter, Priscilla, Tolkien's only surviving child, as of me saying this. In 1920, Tolkien was finally demobilised and left the army. His first job after the Great War was at the Oxford English Dictionary, where he worked mainly on the history and etymology of words of Germanic origin beginning with the letter W. Later that same year, he took up a post as reader in English language at the University of Leeds. While at Leeds, he produced a Middle English vocabulary and a definitive edition of Sir Gawain and the Green Knight, with E.V. Gordon, both academic standard works for several decades. In 1925, he returned to Oxford as Rawlinson and Bosworth Professor of Anglo-Saxon with a fellowship at Pembroke College. The statutes called upon Tolkien to give a minimum of 36 lectures or classes a year, but he did not consider this to be sufficient to cover the subject, and would go on to deliver nearly four times that number in a year, and at least twice the minimum required throughout the 1930s. This was partly because his subject, Anglo-Saxon and early to Middle English, was too niche, and yet later he managed to enlist the support of fellow philologist Charles Wren to assist him in his programme. Owing to this exhaustive workload that often left Tolkien with little or no time to prepare, his Oxford detractors bestowed upon him the reputation of not preparing for his lectures properly. In truth, he prepared them too thoroughly. His deep commitment to the subject prevented him from tackling it in anything less than an exhaustive manner, often sidetracking himself into the consideration of subsidiary details, never managing to finish his treatments of main topics. With four children and Edith to support, Tolkien had to supplement his academic work as a private tutor, often notably to women undergraduates of Lady Margaret Hall and Hughes College, Oxford. The fact that Tolkien was happily married, an abnormality at Oxford at the time, made him eminently suitable to take on female students. The years since the First World War had widened the old rift between language and literature at each faction in the English school. And they were really factions, with personal as well as academic animosities, delighted to interfere with the syllabus of the other. The Lang side made sure the lit students had to spend a good deal of their time studying the obscure branches of English philology, while the lit camp insisted that the Lang undergraduates must set aside many hours from their specialisation, Anglo-Saxon and Middle English, to study the works of Milton and Shakespeare. Tolkien believed that this should be remedied. What was even more regrettable to him was that the linguistic courses laid considerable emphasis on the study of theoretical philology without suggesting the undergraduates should read widely in early and medieval literature. His own love of philology had always been firmly based on his knowledge of literature, and he determined that this situation should be remedied. Tolkien's hope also was that Icelandic should be featured on the syllabus. Tolkien's friendship with C.S. Lewis, known to Tolkien affectionately as Jack, filled the void that for him had been left by the felling of the TCBS and Wiseman in particular on the field of the Somme. C.S. Lewis, once an opponent of Tolkien's syllabus changes, was enrolled by Tolkien into the Kolbeiters in 1927, a reading group studying the Icelandic sagas. C.S. Lewis would lavish praise on the early workings of the legendarium, in particular Tolkien's unfinished poem, The Lay of Lethian. From the Kolbeiters came the legendary Inkling discussion group at Oxford, which met throughout the 1930s and 40s. Lewis alludes to the nature of his friendship with Tolkien in his book, The Four Loves. "Those are golden sessions, when our slippers are on, our feet spread out towards the blaze, and our drinks at our elbows, when the whole world and something beyond the world opens itself to our minds as we talk, and no one has any claim or responsibility for another, but all are free men and equals, as if we had first met an hour ago, while at the same time an affection mellowed by the years enfolds us. Life, natural life, has no better gift to give." In the 1920s, Tolkien undertook translations of Beowulf, Sir Gawain, Pearl, and Sir Orfeo, which he completed from 1926 until the 1940s but did not publish. The first iteration of Sir Orfeo was only published in 1944. The translation of Pearl was abandoned by Blackwell due to lack of commitment on the part of Tolkien. Sir Gawain was broadcast for the first time for a BBC dramatisation in 1953. The complete translations were published posthumously. Christopher Tolkien published and edited Beowulf in 2014, 88 years after it was finished. Tolkien had a passion for perfection in written work of any kind, whether it be philology or stories. This grew from his emotional commitment to his work, which did not permit him to treat it in any manner other than the deeply serious. Nothing was allowed to reach the printer until it had been revised, reconsidered, and polished. This is the main reason why Tolkien only allowed a small proportion of his work to reach the printed page, and why we are lucky in a way that Tolkien's academic and literary oeuvre is as extensive as it is. In 1931, Tolkien gave a paper on the dialects of Chaucer's Reeve's Tale, publishing it 3 years later. He also published an essay on the medieval guide for anchoresses and a philological essay in 1932 on the name Nodens, a reconstructed name of a Celtic deity of healing, following Sir Mortimer Wheeler's unearthing of a Roman temple at Lydney Park in Gloucestershire. The inscriptions found there influenced the naming of characters such as Celebrimbor, the Hand of Silver, manipulated by Sauron into forging the Rings of Power. 10 years after finishing his translation on Beowulf, Tolkien gave an acclaimed lecture on the work, Beowulf, the Monsters and the Critics, which had a lasting influence on Beowulf research. Tolkien established the primacy of the poetic nature of the work as opposed to its purely linguistic elements, treating the work from the perspective of a philologist and a storyteller. At the same time, the consensus of scholarship deprecated Beowulf for dealing with childish battles with monsters rather than realistic tribal warfare. Tolkien argued that the author of Beowulf was addressing human destiny in general, and not limited by particular tribal politics, and therefore the monsters were essential to the poem. A dragon is no idle fancy, he told his audience. Even today, despite the critics, you find men not ignorant of tragic legend and history, who have heard of heroes and indeed seen them, who have yet been caught by the fascination of the worm. Tolkien also revealed how highly he regarded Beowulf. Beowulf is among the most valued of my sources. Tolkien began his series of lectures on Beowulf by entering the room silently, fixing the audience with a look, and suddenly declaiming in Old English the opening lines of the poem, starting with a great cry of what. It was a dramatic impersonation of an Anglo-Saxon bard in a mead hall, and it made the students realise that Beowulf was not just a set text, but a powerful piece of dramatic poetry. Decades later, W.H. Ogden wrote to his former professor, thanking him for the unforgettable experience of hearing him recite Beowulf and stating, "The voice was that of Gandalf." The culmination of his work on Beowulf and Gerhwein, motivated by his love of England, and in particular the countryside of the West Midlands, is embodied in The Hobbit, Bilbo Baggins. Tolkien had already begun his work on The Lost Tales and The Silmarillion by the 1920s, the poems of Beren and Lúthien, Túrin and the Dragon, yet within those works were the kernels of simpler stories, such as the villainous Bill Stickers. For Michael in 1925, Tolkien invented the story of the dog Rover and the sand sorcerer, the Roverandom. After the Roverandom came the tales of Tom Bombadil, loosely based on a doll of Michael's. The Adventures of Tom Bombadil and His Adventures with Goldberry were published in Oxford Magazine in 1934. Tom and his encounters with the Barrow-wights was at first a template for The Hobbit, only for it to appear in The Lord of the Rings instead. Then came the Beatrix Potter-esque animated tale of Mr. Bliss, based on Tolkien's mishaps when driving his first car, which Tolkien lavished with his own watercolour illustrations. In this endeavour, he was inspired by Arthur Rackham, the legendary illustrator of the operas of Wagner, though Tolkien's talents favoured landscapes over figures. Tolkien's children contributed their own literature to the burgeoning Tolkien library, including Wick Smith's The Marvellous Land of the Smergs and Sinclair Lewis's Babbitt. While Tolkien was marking essays sometime during either 1930 or 31, and shortly after moving to 20 Northmore Road in Oxford, he encountered a blank page that had been submitted to him, and on it he jotted, "In a hole in the ground, there lives a hobbit." Babbitt is a more likely contender for Tolkien in coining the term hobbit than is often attributed as rabbit. From the inspiration came Farmer Giles as a contender and potential sequel for The Hobbit. It was read at Oxford and later published in 1949, but it never reached the levels of success of either The Hobbit or Lord of the Rings. Other works in this vein include The Smith Wooden Major and The Leaf by Niggle. Bilbo was not only the culmination of both Tolkien's works and inspirations, but of Ronald the man himself. Bilbo Baggins, son of Belladonna Took, one of the three remarkable daughters of the old Took, and descended from the middle-class respectable Bagginses, middle-aged, plainly dressed, and yet with a yearning for adventure. Ronald, son of Mabel, one of the three remarkable daughters of the old John Suffield, who lived to be 100, and descended from the more respectable Tolkiens. Tolkien once wrote, "I am in fact a hobbit in all but size. I like gardens, trees, and unmechanized farmlands. I smoke a pipe, and even dare to wear in these dull days ornamental waistcoats." Tolkien chose for his hobbit house the name Bag End, the name of his aunt Jane Suffield's farm in Worcestershire. Beyond the personal parallels, Tolkien told an interviewer, "The hobbits are just rustic English people, made small in size because it reflects the generally small reach of their imagination, not the small reach of their courage or latent power." The first manuscript of The Hobbit was written quickly, sometime between 1931 and 1935, merely for personal amusement and never intended for publication. Of the few people shown the manuscript was a graduate, Elaine Griffiths, a former pupil of Tolkien and a family friend, who now worked at the London publishing house Allen & Unwin. Griffiths informed her colleague Susan Dagnall of the existence of this manuscript, and then received a copy from Tolkien, although it was still unfinished. Upon hearing that Allen and Unwin were clamouring to publish it, Tolkien completed A Hobbit, also known as There and Back Again, while submitting 8 of his own illustrations for consideration. Published in 1937, The Hobbit had sold out by Christmas. Sensing the moment had come, Tolkien submitted The Quenta Silmarillion, or The History of the Silmarils, the largest section of the Silmarillion, for publication, only for it to be rejected as too obscure and difficult, not to mention a prequel rather than the sequel to The Hobbit that his publishers wanted. With the various aforementioned children's books of Tolkien rejected as possible sequels, work began in 1937 for The Lord of the Rings. His work on The Lord of the Rings was completed by 1949. Meanwhile, in 1945, Tolkien moved to Merton College, Oxford, becoming the Merton Professor of English Language and Literature, a post which he held until his retirement in 1959. Throughout the over a decade period of writing The Lord of the Rings, he received the constant support of the Inkling discussion group. Unlike the whimsical, child-friendly nature of The Hobbit, Tolkien quickly developed a more serious and mature tone for The Lord of the Rings, relying extensively on the wealth of lore that Tolkien had crafted for the Silmarillion. Lord of the Rings was nearly never published when both Allen and Unwin and Collins refused Tolkien's demand to publish the Silmarillion alongside it. When Collins requested a substantial revision of The Lord of the Rings, Tolkien dropped his demand for the Silmarillion and conceded the division of The Lord of the Rings into a trilogy to offset the cost of publication and what Allen and Unwin predicted as modest sales. The fear of a flop was so great that Tolkien's arrangement with his publisher ensured that Tolkien wouldn't earn any advance or royalties until the books broke even. The trilogy was published from 1954 through to 1956 and became one of the best-selling and beloved novels of all time, remaining so to this day. Though Tolkien abhorred the word novel and instead favoured the idea that his works were heroic romances. The Silmarillion was never published during Tolkien's lifetime, though Tolkien resumed work on it after the success of The Lord of the Rings. Tolkien appointed his third son, Christopher, to be his literary executor, and it is thanks to Christopher that a version of The Silmarillion was published posthumously in 1977, followed by a significant amount of Tolkien's literary fragments, most notably The Lost Tales. The Fall of Gondolin, one of Tolkien's earliest works, dating back to 1917, was finally published in 2018. During his life and retirement, from 1959 up until his death in 1973, Tolkien received steadily increasing public attention and literary fame. In 1961, C.S. Lewis even nominated him for the Nobel Prize in Literature. The sales of his books were so profitable that he regretted having not chosen early retirement. In a 1972 letter, a year before his passing, he deplored having become a cult figure, but admitted that even the nose of a very modest idol cannot remain entirely untickled by the sweet smell of incense. Fan attention became so intense that Tolkien had to take his phone number out of the public directory, and eventually he and Edith moved to the resort town of Bournemouth. Tolkien's status as a best-selling author gave them easy entry into polite society, but Tolkien deeply missed the company of his fellow Inklings. Edith, however, was overjoyed to step into the role of a society hostess, which had been the reason that Tolkien had selected Bournemouth in the first place. The genuine and deep affection between Ronald and Edith was demonstrated by their care considering each other's health, in details like wrapping presents, and the generous way that he gave up his life at Oxford so that she could retire to Bournemouth, and in her pride in his becoming a famous author. They too were forever tied by love to their children and their grandchildren. After Edith's death in 1971, Tolkien recalled, "I never called Edith Luthien, but she was the source of the story that in time became the chief part of the Silmarillion. It was conceived in a small woodland glade filled with hemlocks at Roos in Yorkshire, where I was for a brief time in command of an outpost of the Humber garrison in 1917, and she was able to live with me for a while. In those days her hair was raven, her skin clear, her eyes brighter than you have seen them, and she could sing and dance. But the story has gone crooked, and I am left, and I cannot plead before the inexorable Mandos." In Tolkien's Quenta Silmarillion, the elven princess of Doriath, Luthien, and the only daughter of King Elu Thingol, from Luth, which in Sindarin, one of Tolkien's created languages, means flower, possibly derived from the Old English Luthien, meaning love, is remembered for her epic romance with the mortal man Beren. To win the love of Luthien, Thingol sent Beren the seemingly impossible task of obtaining one of the Silmarils from Morgoth's Iron Crown. The couple succeeded, yet Beren was mortally wounded in the process. In her grief, Luthien died, passing to the halls of Mandos and appealing to him through song. Mandos, in the Legendarium, is responsible for pronouncing the judgments of Elu Ilúvatar on all the spirits of the elven dead. Through Mandos's intercession, Elu Ilúvatar, the One, the Supreme Creator, offered Luthien two choices: to live forever in bliss with the Valar, or to restore both her and Beren to life on the condition that they would live as mortals. Luthien chose the latter, inaugurating the first union of man and elf, the line that would produce Elrond half-elven. The story has its echo in the tale of her descendant Arwen and her love for Aragorn, from the posthumously published Lays of Beleriand, and thus in anguish Beren paid for that great doom upon him laid, the deathless love of Luthien, too fair for love of mortal men, and in his doom was Luthien snared, the deathless in his dying shared, and fate them forged a binding chain of living love and mortal pain. Tolkien had the name Luthien engraved on Edith's tombstone at Wolvercote Cemetery, Oxford, when Tolkien died 21 months later, on the 2nd of September 1973, at the age of 81. He was buried in the same grave with Beren added to his name.